From the heartland of America and the gateway to the West, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie, and welcome to Coast AM. We'll have our emerging artists tonight. Just go to the coasttocoastam.com website and take a look at their websites. Neat stuff. Next hour, how evil works. Here's what's happening. Tense situation in New York over the weekend. Police investigating the failed bomb car left in Times Square. Videotape possibility of a suspect shedding clothes in an alley and putting it in a bag, and they found a substance that resembled fertilizer in the parked SUV. The New York commissioner there said there's no evidence that a Pakistani Taliban videotape claimed the failed car bomb is valid. The SUV contained three barbecue grill-sized propane tanks, you know, those white ones that you use when you barbecue, fireworks, two filled 5-gallon gasoline containers, and two clocks with batteries, electrical wire, and other components. Timers were connected to a 16-ounce can filled with the fireworks, which were then apparently intended to set the gas cans and propane afire. Doug Hagman from U.S. Homeland Security U.S. Doug, is this just a warning? Because some people are beginning to speculate on that.
Well, you know what, George? It could very well be, but it looks... Upon closer analysis, the configuration of the bomb inside of the vehicle, the assembly of the bomb, that configuration is remarkably similar to the vehicle that was parked in front of the Tiger nightclub in the Haymarket area in London back in June of 2007. So that bomb in London failed to detonate because of a miscalculation in the air-to-fuel proportion. This bomb, we don't exactly know yet, but may have not been successfully detonated because of a miscalculation with regard to the timing and the amounts of gunpowder explosive used into the mix. So it's speculation at this point, but it certainly follows the pattern of an Al-Qaeda type of operation.
It seems kind of low tech, but again, that's most of their operations, isn't it?
Well, indeed it is, and they're noted for using household materials. It's a technique used by Al-Qaeda around the world, and especially in the U.K. It's coming to this country now.
All right. Thank you, Doug. Doug Hagman again from Homeland Security U.S. That is not affiliated with Homeland Security. Doug monitors terrorist-type websites. With no remedy in sight, President Barack Obama warned of a massive and potentially unprecedented environmental disaster as a badly damaged oil well a mile deep in the Gulf of Mexico spewed a widening and deadly slick toward delicate wetlands and wildlife, a story we've been reporting on since this horrible tragedy occurred, and we'll continue to watch that situation as long as we have to. At least 10 people dead in Mississippi and Tennessee, 7 people killed in Tennessee, 3 in Mississippi, maybe more, by a line of storms that brought heavy flooding and possible tornadoes to the region over the weekend. The Food and Drug Administration is investigating a healthcare company for possible other problems now following its recall of more than 40 over-the-counter infants and children's liquid medications. McNeil Consumer Healthcare, based in Pennsylvania, issued the voluntary recall in the United States and 11 other countries after consulting with the FDA. The recall involves children's versions of Tylenol, Tylenol Plus, Motrin, Zyrtex, Benadryl, because they just don't meet quality standards. According to McNeil and the FDA, some of the products recalled may have a higher concentration of active ingredient than is specified on the bottle. Others may contain particles, while still others may contain inactive ingredients that do not meet internal testing requirements. Just 5 minutes of exercise in a green space area, such as a park, can boost mental health, according to researchers. There is growing evidence now that combining activities such as walking or cycling with nature boosts well-being. And the latest analysis, researchers in the United Kingdom looked at evidence from 1,200 people in 10 studies and found fast improvements in mood and self-esteem. In Turin, Italy, Pope Benedict XVI all but gave an outright endorsement of the authenticity of the Shroud of Turin, calling the cloth that some believe is Christ's burial shroud an icon written with the blood of a crucified man. During a visit to the Shroud, and the northern Italian city of Turin, the Pope didn't raise the scientific questions that surround the linen and whether it might be a medieval forgery. Jerry Corsi, author of the book, The Shroud Codex, is in Europe right now. Jerry, tell me, how close did you get to the shroud? Did you see it?
Oh, yes. I've been in to see the shroud. Now, I have press credentials, George, and I've been in to see it three times. I've photographed it and photographed myself inside the church with the permission of the Shroud Committee and the Archbishop's Committee. And I was very close in the press section yesterday to Pope Benedict saying his Mass. There were over 25,000 people in the Piazza San Carlo yesterday in Turin to hear the Mass outdoors.
Tell me about the people out there, Jerry. How many?
Oh, 25,000 people. The square was packed.
Wow.
And, George, the emotional impact of seeing the shroud in person is just huge. I also saw it in 1998. I came to Turin. And I've studied the scientific evidence. I've concluded the shroud is the authentic burial cloth of Christ. I've seen in person a great variety of Leonardo da Vinci's artwork, for instance, the Mona Lisa in the Louvre or the Last Supper in Milan. And the Shroud of Turin just has an emotional impact. If this is a forgery, it's the greatest piece of art ever created. And just being in the shroud, in the presence of the shroud, you have the feeling you're looking at the actual body, the crucified body and the face of Jesus Christ. I mean, it's an overwhelming emotional and religious experience.
I was going to say, Jerry, it just might be awe-inspiring just to be even close to the shroud, isn't it?
It's just overwhelming, George. I'm going to go back today again, study it. I'll be writing about my experience here in Turin on WorldNet Daily, where I'm a senior staff reporter, filing stories. I filed a very short video of the Mass yesterday of Pope Benedict the 16th on YouTube, and I'll be trying to share this experience not only with your great audience, but as many people as read WorldNet Daily as I can.
Great. And what time is it in Italy now, Jerry?
Oh, it's just early morning. I woke up early. I woke up at 6 a.m. It's just about 7 a.m. I'm just getting going. It's Monday morning here in Italy.
All right. Thank you very much, Jerry Corsi. He'll be giving us updates on the Shroud of Turin. Incredible story. Hey, how effective are online dating sites? What about matchmaking as well? Up next, Marla Martinson joins us with her latest work, Diary of a Beverly Hills Matchmaker. She's next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, I'm George Norrie. Let me tell you a little bit about our guest this hour. Marla Martinson discovered that she could use her own personal dating experiences to help others and subsequently turned her talent into a career matchmaker in Los Angeles. Since 2001, actually, her skills have led many couples to matrimony. Marla's work inspires people, gives them the hope that they can find their soulmates. And currently, Marla writes for such online publications as The Cougar Candy Store, Commitment Absolutely Fabulous Women, and Examiner. She was named the Over 40 Female of the Week in 2010 for the Over40Females.com, and she is the author of Excuse Me, Your Soulmate is Waiting, Good Date, Bad Date, and Diary of a Beverly Hills Matchmaker. Here she is on Coast to Coast. Marla, how are you?
Hi, George. I'm great. How are you?
Good to have you with us. Now, this is intriguing. First of all, let me ask you about these online dating services that are all over the place. People experiment with it. They try with it. Do they work?
Well, you're right. There's so many. I mean, there's online dating services for every group now. If you're Jewish, if you're Muslim, if you're Christian, if you like hiking, it's, you know, every group is represented. It's fabulous. It can work. My own aunt is engaged to a wonderful man who she met on Match.com, and I've met many couples who have gone on to get married and meet wonderful people. It is time-consuming, so for people who are very, very busy with careers and kids, you have to keep in mind it can become almost like a second job weeding through the profiles, and you have to be careful as well because anybody can just go on there. So security-wise and time-wise, there are some issues, but it's a great tool, I think.
Marla, in the old days, people would either meet in high school or people would be matched up by families. My parents were. Back a long, long time ago, their families introduced them to each other and basically said, here's your wife, here's your husband. And it was the old custom in those days. They did it, you know, and they're still married. They're married 60-plus years this year.
It's
amazing.
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't happen anymore.
Well, you know what it does, though, in a lot of other cultures. I know they're still doing it in India. They're doing it in the Middle East. They're doing it in a lot of places. But in our Western society, it's just we don't do it anymore. And we're the women are working just as hard as the men, and everybody's busy, and people are moving away from their families and not living close by, and we're kind of on our own to find our mate. And you're right, it seems like things were a lot simpler in the olden days.
You're a matchmaker in Beverly Hills. What inspired you to write the Diary of a Beverly Hills Matchmaker?
Well, what happened was my first two books, Excuse Me, Your Soulmate is Waiting and Good Date, Bad Date, were a relationship advice book. So for anybody wanting to find out all the tips about dating and all of that and how to find your soulmate, that's what I wrote those for. And then afterwards, I thought, well, I don't have anything more to say on that subject. I've given all my tips and all of my advice. But the thing that people kept asking me was, how did you become a matchmaker? What's it like being a matchmaker? Tell me some funny stories. Tell me things behind the scenes. So I decided to write my memoir, and that's Diary of a Beverly Hills Matchmaker. And you really get a peek behind the scenes on what it's like doing my job. And I also tell a lot of stories about my own life with my own relationship and some of my background. And I would say it's a comedy. It's a really great read.
What is it about people trying to find their soulmate these days? I mean, do you find that to be more evident than ever? Are people just hungry for relationships?
They really are, and I think the way that it's so easy for us to get divorced as well in this society, and the divorce rate is so high, it's almost like people kind of rush into things nowadays. They're not really taking into all the factors into consideration, and it's so easy to undo. So I think people are rushing into it a little more than we would take time in the past. So it's people are just on a hamster wheel, you know, rushing with the careers and rushing to get a relationship and let me find my soulmate. And I think a lot of the missing part is working on ourselves.
Go ahead.
Yeah, we don't need to be in a relationship every minute of our life. I think if we have some issues from the past, or we've had a bad relationship, or maybe our heart was broken, or we lost a spouse, it's okay to take some time to work on ourselves, maybe get some counseling, take some seminars, or just sit alone for a while and get ready for another relationship and not just jump right in on a rebound.
Yet some people want to stay single, don't they?
Well, some people do. Some people like there are men that I meet that are like confirmed bachelors, and they just like to date beautiful women, and it seems like they're not interested in getting married. But most of the people that I meet really would like to find a great relationship and have somebody in their life permanently.
Is your job as a matchmaker difficult? Do you ever encounter some tough times with it?
I do, and that usually stems from unrealistic expectations, where maybe you'll have, in this...
From you or the client?
From the client. Well, I'm hoping everybody connects and gets married, but often, especially here in Los Angeles, when the women see the men, there's a lot of men with a lot of money here, and they see the celebrities and the kind of lifestyle, and they're hoping to get that. The men see that all these gorgeous girls looking like Heidi Klum or Selma Hayek, and no matter what their physical situation is, if they need to lose 50 pounds or if they're, they still think that they deserve a top model. So it gets kind of challenging that way. That's probably the most challenging.
Well, I have noticed that being in Los Angeles and in St. Louis in the Midwest, there not with all of them, obviously, but there is a difference between people in different geographical locations, attitude, and everything else. Why is that?
Yeah, I think that, like the Midwest, we think of that as like the heartland, and that's the real, the real heart of America, and the real people and the working people and all that, and family. And then when you get out on the coast, especially L.A., it's more Hollywood and going for your dreams and bigger and better and all that. And I think the big cities, it's people are busy and they're hoping to get the best thing they can get. And it kind of attracts the people that are a little more shallow in certain ways, maybe flakier and have higher aspirations or dreams or really going for things. So it is kind of interesting.
Do you ever get a client who just needs a lot of work, a lot of training? Whether it's a guy or a woman, I don't know if you match them, if you work with both.
I assume
though you work with men primarily, right?
The men are my paying clients, and they're businessmen who are very, very busy, and a lot of them own companies, and they just don't want to sit on the internet looking, you know, for hours for somebody. They don't want to approach a woman in a bar, so they hire me to find a wonderful woman to settle down with. So I work with both, but the men are my paying clients. And yes, sometimes, you know, especially the younger guys, I notice, because we have a lot of single mothers now in our society, and maybe the dad's not around to teach the younger men the etiquette, that the manners that the older gentlemen have. The older guy will open the door for the lady, he'll pay the check, he'll pay her valet ticket, he'll compliment her. He kind of has been trained that way, and the younger guys forget to open the door, forget to make sure the girl gets to her car safely. Some little things I've noticed, so I'll kind of train them on that. And the ladies, well, and both the men and the women, I do coach them on not talking about your ex too much on the date, showing up on time, not texting during the date, not drinking too much alcohol on the date so that you spill your guts, and we don't want you, you know, there's no reason to be talking about your crappy childhood or what medications you're on now, or that you can't pay your rent, or that you're going into bankruptcy. People tend to spill all this on a first date, and you don't even know if you want a second, let alone hear people's problems and whole backgrounds. So I say just keep the first date fun, light, talk about things like, where did you go on your last vacation? What kind of wine do you like? What kind of sports you're into? Seen any good movies? Just fun things to kind of get, see if there's any chemistry there for a second date.
How would you rate this kind of a date? Guy takes a girl out. They don't go to an extravagant restaurant, a nice one, but, you know, not one of the top five stars that you would know about. And he pulls out a 2-for-1 coupon for the dinner. Now, what is her reaction? Does she think he's cheap or business smart? What do you think?
She'll think he's cheap on a first date. Guys, keep the coupons for you and a buddy, or take your mom out with the coupon.
Not the date, huh?
No, it does. It looks, it's, women don't really care for that. They want to see that you're really going to pull out all the stops to impress her. And then later, if you're in a relationship, she's going to like that you're saving money, because that's what you're going to need for your future.
Well, what if, though, wouldn't you come across a woman who would say, you know what, this guy, I like him. I mean, he's a great guy, but he's smart. He's business smart. Mm-hmm. Or is it just a wipeout for him?
I would hope so, but you know what, generally...
By the way, I'm not talking about me.
Yeah. I'm going to be looking around and seeing if you're pulling out any coupons around town.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I would say don't do that. In your life, it's great. Girls love a guy who is financially responsible and who plans for the future and all that, but for the first date, just keep the coupon in the wallet.
Keep it away. What is one of the most ludicrous stories your clients have come back and told you about the date?
Well, I had I guess I can say this on late night radio.
Well, temper that. We do have children listening.
Well, one guy did have a foot fetish, and he was interested in he kind of took a dive under the table to get a closer look at the lady's pedicure.
No, on a date? On a first date?
On a first date, and he was a distinguished doctor. So she says, gosh, I really...
Was he a podiatrist? No, I'm kidding.
No. So that was kind of outrageous. And then I have, in Los Angeles, the guys tend to like the ladies very, very thin. And so it's hard to find these waifs, you know, like on the catwalk to date. And one gentleman, I matched him with a wonderful lady who was 5'5", 115 pounds. And he said she was wonderful and everything, but if only she could have been a bit thinner. So I was frustrated. So I found him another gorgeous, beautiful lady. She was 5'5", 105 pounds, very thin. And the feedback was she was great. I really liked her, but if only she could have been a bit thinner. And I was typing back my response to the feedback, and I said, I don't have anybody thinner than 105 pounds. Now I'm going to start trolling the morgues to find you a choice corpse to date.
Oh.
I didn't know what to do.
It does get to be frustrating, doesn't it?
Yeah.
What does this tell you about society, where people don't meet people like they used to, and they need either dating services or matchmakers like yourself who, you know, do a thorough professional job at what you do. You You take your job seriously. I know that. What does that tell you, though, about society in general, where they need help to find somebody?
Well, I think it's a great thing that we do have matchmakers and dating services now, because so many people are meeting that way. It shows me that people have a bit of a short attention span, that we're very busy, we're working very hard, we're jetting around the place, we're in our cars, we just don't have the time anymore, and it's sort of sad in one way, but it's great that we can fit all these things in as well. So,
Marlo, we're gonna take this quick break. We're gonna come back. We'll also take some phone calls with you on Coast to Coast AM. Well, next hour, David Kopelian joins us. How evil works. When we come back, we'll continue chatting with the Beverly Hills matchmaker Marlo Martinson, and take your phone calls on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast. Marla Martinson is our guest. I'm getting lots of emails from people who want Marla's website. It's linked up right now at coasttocoastam.com, as well as several other related websites. Marla, have you ever just thrown your arms up in the air and just say, I can't help you?
Well, I've wanted to sometimes. When I was working for a company for 7 years, the Beverly Hills Matchmaking Company. Since then, last year I have left there and I have my own boutique company now, where I'm just working with people that I really feel that I can match. When you work for somebody else, I had to match people that the owner of the company would sign up, and sometimes they were people that were quite difficult. So now it's much easier, where I can really assess. I don't want to work with somebody. I don't want to take someone's money or waste their time if I don't think I can get them into a great relationship.
What got you into this end of it?
Well, it's interesting, because for years I was an actress and I worked in the restaurant business for 20 years. And I moved down to Los Angeles from Seattle, and I did spend most of the 90s in Chicago, and I was acting out there. And when I met my husband here in Los Angeles, he had a friend who was taking over the management position at a video dating service. And she said, if you'd like a part-time job, you can have it. And I did. I needed a new gig. I wanted to get out of the restaurant business, and I was still doing a bit of acting. And I loved it. And I was at that company for a year and a half. When I left there, I answered an ad in the back of an actor's magazine to be a talent scout to find these beautiful women for the guys at the upscale matchmaking service. And I ended up staying there for almost 7 years and becoming the vice president, VP of matchmaking. So it just was something that the universe led me to do.
Well, that's super. Now, did you meet him through a matchmaking, or did you meet him conventionally?
I met him through a mutual friend. So actually, it kind of was.
It was kind of like a matchmaking.
Yeah, it was. She. I met her just by chance at the Rite Aid in the vitamin section one night, and we became friends and exchanged phone numbers. And she started talking about this guy in her building. She manages the apartment building he lived in, and kept talking about this guy. And I said, well, maybe I should meet him. And he plays piano, so I went to Playa Del Rey, where he was performing, and I walked up to the piano, and we looked at each other, and we've been together ever since. It's been now 9 years together.
What do you think of blind dates?
Well, basically what I do, the people that I'm matching up, it basically is a blind date. They both know a lot about each other first, and then I give the gentleman the woman's phone number, and he calls her, but they hadn't seen each other before, so I think a blind date can be great, and especially if you have a friends who match you up, like my friend did with us. She had a good instinct, and I'm glad we did it.
And do they text each other a lot in the beginning, or email each other a lot to try to get to know each other? Or do you think they go out on a date?
Usually it's the gentleman will call the woman up, and they'll just chat a little bit, and he'll say, when would you like to meet? Let's go out to dinner or lunch or happy hour, whatever. And I say, don't talk too long. This texting is getting out of hand, because
it is.
Women get turned off if the man makes a first contact with a text. They find it very impersonal, and it's like, gosh, can't he just pick up the phone and ask me out properly? It's very impersonal, and sometimes the texts don't get there right away. There's a problem with the cell phone service, and people are canceling dates by text or joking, and then the meaning gets misconstrued. So I have heard of a lot of miscommunications.
The biggest misunderstandings with texting, I've seen friends go through it. I've seen loved ones go through it.
Yeah.
Where you know, you're absolutely right. One word taken out of context blows up the whole thing.
And email too, because you can't hear the inflection of someone's voice or their humor, and you could take it wrong as well. So let's get out back to that old-fashioned way and just get on the phone for the first few dates.
Let's take some phone calls. Wanda in Tucson, Arizona, west of the Rockies. Hey, Wanda, you're up with us. Go ahead.
Thank you for taking my call.
Sure thing.
I wanted to mention the fact that I had met my second husband through a dating service. And it was a dating service that was in another city in Connecticut. I come from Connecticut, Norwich, Connecticut. And I had gone with another friend to this dating service in Connecticut. And after being interviewed by the woman, and she was checking out all my credentials, you might say, she said to me, she says, "Oh, Wanda, you don't know who I am, do you?" And I said, "No." She says her name, and I said, "Oh, my God, I went to school with her from elementary right up to graduation, and she was my neighbor. Her sister was a girlfriend of my father's hired hand on the farm up the street."
Small world.
Small world. That was fate, Wanda. That's wonderful.
Yeah, how'd the relationship go? You said the second husband. What happened there?
Well, we got married. We went together for a year, and I was an activities director in convalescent homes, and he was retired. He was out of Social Security disability, and he was so nice. He kept coming down to see me all the time, and then I went back with him to where he lived in Windsor. And so finally I said, "Okay, 1982, that's the year for you." That's how I remember getting married, in 1982. So we did get married. We went to Hawaii on our honeymoon, and because he had been there before and he wanted to take me there. And then finally we settled down in Norwich, and I worked. And then finally he wanted to come back out here to Tucson, because this is where he had lived with his mother and father in for the years. And so I said, "Okay, well, I'll follow you." So we came out here, and I've lived out here since 1985. He passed away, I think, in 1992. He had muscular dystrophy, but I went with that, and I helped him out during his times and so forth. And
well, good,
he had a very nice life.
Good for you, Wanda. Thank you. It's a great story. Marla, do you find that most guys in their 20s don't go through a matchmaker or a dating service, but generally a guy who's in his 40s or 50s will?
You're right. Yeah, the 20s, they really don't need it yet. They're still out maybe getting their education or
working going to clubs
their career, or going
stuff.
To clubs, and they just want to have fun. And I don't think a guy in his 20s should be settling down and getting married. I think he should be working on his career and just having fun. They do start coming to me, though, in the 30s. I have two clients right now who are 32 years old, and then I have a 43-year-old, and I have a 64-year-old. So they start in the 30s on up because they think, well, I'd maybe like to find, especially if they want to have children, they'll think, "I want to find the right lady to start, you know, thinking about a future with."
You don't think, though, a guy in his 20s should get married?
No, I honestly don't. I think especially women tend to be a little more mature. I do think that a guy should work on his career and work on himself and have fun, because later when you're married, you don't want him to regret, think, "Did I miss out on something? Did I, you know, go out with as many girls as I would have liked to?" I don't think they should.
I thought you were going to say, when you're married, there goes the fun.
The marriage is a lot of fun, too, but you don't want to think back and think, "I could have had, you know, did I get enough fun and packed in there?" And then go cheat on your wife. You don't want
what, to. Woulda, shoulda, right?
Yeah, woulda, shoulda, coulda.
Let's go to West Hartford, Connecticut. Hey, Bill, go ahead.
Yes, Hi, Marla. Hi, this is Bill in West Hartford, Connecticut. I'm George Norrie's age. I'm 59, and I'm interested in science and the space program, science and astronomy in general and the space program. And I'm a member and have been a member for the last 4 or 5 years of a dating website called Science Connection, which you may or may not have heard of, www.sciconnect.com. And the point is, as of now, 2010, there's one woman I've been communicating with by email, only by email, not by phone or in person, for the past 2 years, who lives in West Virginia. That's really far, far away, 800 miles or whatever from where I live in Connecticut. My point is, I know this woman and I will always be email friends, but nothing more than that. What do you suggest I do as far as this dating website, Science Connection, of which most of the women and men are atheists or agnostics, of which I am an atheist myself. That's why I'm so thrilled with this site. How do I work on this to try to find a woman in Connecticut or closer to Connecticut, like Massachusetts, for my girlfriend?
Oh, yeah, you want somebody with your interests.
Yes.
Yeah, well, and then do you want a woman who's an atheist, too? Would that be the best?
Atheist or agnostic, preferably.
Agnostic or something. Yeah, you should look in Google groups in your area with put in those keywords and see what comes up. And there's also a meetup.com. They have meetup groups in various states. I know they do have them in Oregon and in California. I don't know if they have them in your area, but Google that and see. Maybe you can start a group, but there's got to be in your area some like-minded people for sure.
I'm hoping that some woman who listens to Coast to Coast AM regularly.
Yeah, if there's any women out there.
Who's a member of Science Connection will email me on Science Connection.
Okay, thanks, that would Bill. Be wonderful.
You have no idea, Marla, how many people have asked me to set up a coast-to-coast dating service through our website. Now, I don't want to do it for a lot of reasons, but it's interesting that people with like interests want to meet people that they get along with like that.
Oh, absolutely. I had a gentleman who skied like 3 months out of the year, and he had a place in Aspen, and he wanted a woman that skied. I mean, that was a requirement because it was such a big part of his life. So,
sure.
Yeah, you want to fit into each other's lifestyle and enjoy things together.
Marla, what's the old saying, opposites attract? I always think, you know, people of similar interests
mm-hmm.
attract.
And opposites, I think, also physically. It seems like the I'm very pale with red hair, and it seems like the darker guys always liked me, the tall, dark, and handsome. And I was always kind of attracted to the, you know, the Latin look or a darker look.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I see that with often when people are describing the type of look that they're looking for. It's kind of like opposites attract. I think as far as interests, you're right. People do tend to want to find people with more of the same interests. It doesn't always work out with personality as much.
You know, we've talked a lot about some fun things with this, but there's also a serious side to it. And what would your advice be to a woman, for example, who's out there right now listening, who's in a relationship where maybe her husband or her boyfriend hits her and she continues to stay? What would you tell her?
Yeah. Well, I mean, of course, I would say leave, but many women tend to stay out of fear, out of low self-esteem, out of financial problems. It's very important to get help, because a man who is abusing a woman, that usually doesn't occur just once, and it doesn't stop, and it can
right.
escalate, and she can really be in grave danger. So,
and some women have abused the guys, too.
Yeah, and especially verbally. Verbal abuse, too, is very bad. So it's a very sad situation, and I would hope that the women would reach out and try to get some help. It's a lot to do with background and low self-esteem.
Were they both brought up that way? Is that what has happened to them?
Many abusers have been abused themselves and not learned skills. And then women, I think we, a lot of us do have, we're needy, we have low self-esteem. We don't think that we can, that we're told to by the abuser that you're stupid, you're no good, you can't, you know, live without me. And people are brainwashed, or they have children, or they can't afford to get out. And we think, that's why I like to empower women and encourage women to get educated and get skills and not get married too early and don't have children too early. We need to take care of ourselves, save your own money in a separate bank account. I have a very good marriage, but I have my own money in a savings account, and I always want to have that power that I'm in my relationship because I want to be there, not because I have to be here. So we have to take care of ourselves.
Let's go to Charleston, West Virginia. Pat, you're up with us. Hey, Pat, welcome to Coast to Coast.
Hello.
Hi.
I was wondering, do you ever run across older women that only want younger men?
I think that's called a cougar nowadays.
Well, I wouldn't want to be called that, but I just don't like old wrinkled up old men with hair on their head.
What age, Pat, are we talking about here? I mean, how young do you want them?
Nobody over 40.
Nobody over 40?
Uh-huh. And what is your age, Pat, did you tell us?
65.
You don't want anybody over 40. Well, you know, you can try. There's sites now, cougar sites, and I don't.
Why do they call them cougars, by the way?
What I think because they're prey, or they're after the. I'm not sure.
Unbelievable. All right, but that's what you want.
But that's what we call them out here. I mean, this is the new term, right? It's like all these cougars, and women will come to me too, and they'll be in their 40s and say, "Look, I'm." Just dated a 30-year-old, and I don't want to date guys my age. And I can't help them because the men that come to me always want a little bit younger than themselves. So I can't do that. You'll have to go look on some special websites for that, I think, or go to some special clubs. Or maybe start a group, Pat.
So an older woman who likes a younger guy is a cougar. What is an older guy who likes a younger woman? What is he called?
Dirty old man? I don't know.
Let's go to Robert in Dayton, Ohio, first-time caller. Hey, Robert, go ahead.
How you doing?
Good. All is well.
Well, I have a nice story that my fiancé and I, we have made it to our first year together.
Okay, go ahead.
We actually met online. We actually talked for about a year together. We met through a sim online called Second Life, and we talked unlike most couples that, you know, date and all this, and I lived in South Carolina, and that's quite a bit of distance, you know, and with the distance, that's the only way we could communicate was through the internet. And that's how we got to know each other. And eventually, I moved up here to her. And with my birthday just being passed, we celebrated my first year together.
And it's working well?
Yes, it is.
Super.
Oh, congratulations.
What would you say the success rate is, Marla, for matchmaking relationships that start to work? I mean, do the marriages happen? What percent? And how long do they last? Is it higher than the norm?
No, I think it's really just the same as any, you know, the whole population. We do have a high, what do we have, a 50 or 60%?
50 plus. Now it's going higher.
Plus. Yeah, and so just because you meet through a matchmaking service doesn't get, I don't think it gives you a better chances for it to last, because I have had clients too who I've matched and then they have gotten a divorce and they've come back to be matched again. But I've had a lot of people get married, and I don't think it just depends on the people and the commitment level and the compatibility and everything. So, but long distance is tough. That was great that this gentleman could get into a great relationship, but it's hard to maintain and hard to get to know each other. Skype now is great though, because you feel like you're just in the room with the person. You can both get a cup of coffee or a glass of wine and sit there and look at each other and talk, and I think it's great.
Technology has done wonderful things, hasn't it?
Yeah, I sit with my friends in France, and we sit there and talk and feel like we're together, and, you know, my friends in Paris. It's wonderful.
Marla, people who are interested in your work, Diary of a Beverly Hills Matchmaker, where do they go and get it?
They can get it on Amazon.com and BarnesandNoble.com, and it's at Barnes & Noble and many bookstores. There's information on my website about it, and I think and men and women both will love this book. It reads like a novel. It's my memoir, and it's very funny and has a lot of great stories. I think people will really be surprised.
Super. Thank you, Marla. Fascinating.
Thank you.